Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, how are you?
Oh, I'm not going to lie to you, buddy. I'm a little little weary today after a bit of a hairy travel day yesterday. Kind of dragging it around a little today.
Florida, you know what? It's funny. For such a great place, it sucks to get to from Edmonton.
Oh, my God. It is such a pain in the butt. And then when you get travel delays, then you got nothing. Like, so yesterday when you and I did that hit, so I think we did that. Are we allowed to tell people we pre-taped that? I don't know if we are or not. But so let's say that was at, what time is it at even? Like 1:30 Edmonton time?
Yeah.
I got, so I was at the airport already. I'd driven an hour to the airport, checked in, and I got home at 3 a.m. Edmonton time. So, like, I was 14 hours after I talked to you that I got home. It was just a nightmare of a travel day. So, I'm a little dazed and confused today.
The Oilers' power play was not dazed and confused last night against the St. Louis Blues as they were dominant 4-for-6. And really, a stretch there, well, technically almost 5, because they scored two goals on the one power play after the first one was disallowed, and then they came back and scored. And you know what? They did everything that the coaches have been, you know, Tom McClellan's talked about. We'd like to get our zone entries better. We'd like us to shoot the puck, and we'd like guys to go to the net. And they did all of them, and suddenly they scored. Shocking.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was only able to watch some of the highlights because I was in transit. But, yeah, it's funny because how many days have we spent, you know, harping on that power play and trying to come up with ideas and trying to figure out. I mean, it's very clearly it was a major, major Achilles heel for them, and they needed to get it worked out. And it's funny the way it goes in spurts like that for them, where they're just so bad for so long, and then they're all world for one game. And that's the thing. I mean, good teams with good power plays, there's just this there's this level of consistency that over a 10, 15 game stretch, you'll achieve a percentage that is sustainable, you know. And so, look, the Oilers have the skill, flat-out skill in their lineup to score 4 power play goals any night of the week. But it's the consistency where that's lacking with them. So that, I think, you know, credit to them. They got it done. The power play looked good from everything I could tell. But I don't really take a lot out of one game. I mean, let's see 3, 4, 5 games where it at least looks good. You don't expect 4 goals every night, but where it looks good at least over a long period of time. And that will be the baby steps that I think even they're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely, Ryan. And the thing is, Jake Allen wasn't very good. That helps. But the other thing, because you don't want to complain when they finally do get 4, is they drew 6. They moved their feet. They pressed the pace often enough that they drew penalties. There's been long stretches this year where you look and they're getting 1-2 opportunities a game. You're going to starve at that rate no matter how efficient you are.
Yeah, the way you get other teams taking penalties is to kind of have them back on their heels a little bit and chasing a little bit. And the Oilers haven't done a real great job of that the last little while. So the way you do it is by, you know, getting pucks in and banging some bodies, making them feel like they're scrambling around, getting sustained offensive zone pressure time so that they're deep into their shifts and getting tired and making mistakes. I mean, those are all traits of a good, fast, but heavy team that can lean on other teams. And the Oilers just, they haven't really been that group. So I didn't see the way all the penalties were drawn last night, but when I saw the number, I definitely remarked at that too, Robin, that, okay, obviously, it was a night where they had the other team on their heels. And I don't know if the rest of the game was reflective of that, but drawing that many penalties tells me that.
Right. Have you spent any time watching, specifically focusing on Eero Pakarinen?
Well, we've watched him for a couple of seasons now, and I would say, yeah, I feel pretty comfortable with my ability to assess the player.
Okay, because I've been watching him very closely, and to me, not a player that I have I've seen enough that I would put Zach Cassian back in the top 9 over Pakarinen. Too often, he does not make the right play with the puck. He's more of a crash-and-banging guy. If he's a penalty killer, fine. But playing with Hall and Draisaitl last night on 4 different occasions, there is a play to be made, and he's making the wrong decision with the puck, and he's just dumping it in, and it's not working.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not going to be able to comment too much on last night, but what I'll say about that combination and about Cassian is I felt from the beginning that Cassian looked like he was a player who could play with skilled players without, inhibiting the line too much. Like the play doesn't die with Zach as much as it does with some of their other bottom six forwards, who really all they're programmed to do is dump it in and chase. So you don't mind a little bit of that mentality in a guy's game, but you want somebody that at least has the ability to make plays at a little bit of a higher level. And I've noticed that in Cassian since he arrived, that his ability to make plays at speed is pretty impressive. He can find guys off the rush. He finds guys that maybe wasn't the obvious guy to give the puck to. I like his shot. He's wildly inconsistent. I mean, let's be honest, his production is wildly inconsistent, but he has a skill set that to me makes sense with skilled players. Pakarainen is a guy we've seen a lot of him, and he's one of those guys that's wired to dump it in and go chase and hit guys, and there's a place for that. But putting that next to two skilled guys and expecting him to be able to think at the same pace offensively with those guys, he doesn't have a chance. He's never been that type of player, whereas Cassian has been a point-producing player at a reasonably high level before and should be able to process. So I can't, you know, because I was in Florida, I didn't get a chance to see a game or two leading up to it. I'm not sure what the reasoning was exactly. But over the long term, I don't think Pakarainen has any business being in the top probably eight forwards on this team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, Ryan. You know, Pakarainen, you don't need to find out anything about him at this point.
No.
Now, Cassian, we generally speaking, we know what we've seen of him with other teams, and he comes as you described. I want to see if he's got a chance to be that tweener. In other words, at worst, a third line guy and a guy who can move up. I suspect he can be, but why not see him with that group of forwards in the games that remain?
Yeah, and I think he's been given opportunity to be up and around that hemisphere. Like, I think he's been given looks there. And if you guys recall back to, I mean, first of all, his days in Buffalo, where, I mean, he had a tough time showing any kind of consistency there at all and ended up being traded, a big, fast, physical, young player that when he got traded, people went, oh, man, they seem to be giving up on that kind of size and skill early. And it was for Cody Hodgson, who, you know, some felt the Canucks were also giving up on. Look at where Hodgson, you know, is or isn't now. But it was when he got to Vancouver where he sort of showed everybody what his capabilities were at the NHL level. He played with some good players, played with the Sedins a bit, showed that he could make plays, produce a few points, score some goals. But the inconsistency was the same thing. It was wild. So I recall stories all the time out of there about Cassian down on the fourth line again. Cassian, you know, he was from first line to fourth line kind of a few different times. That's his MO a little bit is, you can play him with skilled players, and on any given night, he can definitely make plays with those guys, but he can disappear for long stretches of time as well. And I think with what Todd's trying to accomplish from here to the end of the year, what he wants to get out of his players, I think it's hard for him to keep rewarding somebody who the consistency isn't there. And I don't know if it's consistency of effort. I'm not sure maybe where Todd's head is at with that. But I think Todd's got bigger lessons in mind from here to the end of the season. And if a guy's not showing what he feels he needs to show to continue to earn that opportunity, then I guess that's what we're going to see.
Well, the one thing we're going to see, according to Todd McClellan's, Ryan Rashog joins us, is he's going to move Drysdale to the wing and put Nugent Hopkins and have all of, you know, Hall and Eberle and McDavid and Drysdale, Nugent Hopkins in his top six to see what he has sometimes in these next final nine games. Yeah. You know, they say they want to see what they have. So to me, then, why not do it tomorrow? Right? Like, why wait? What are you waiting for?
Yeah. Maybe the GM wants to look at three centers still. I mean, maybe the general manager needs a little bit more of a look at what it's like having those three guys at center. And I mean, it's such a small sample size to make the kind of decision they've got to make. But maybe that's part of it, because we know Peter made it clear he wanted to see the look. I mean, at trade deadline time, he was telling us that he wanted to see what that looked like. So, you know, maybe they've split it up and said, okay, we're going to give this a go for a little while, and then we're going to give this a go for a little while. And while it'll be a small look at both, at least they can hit the offseason. Because, I mean, guys, I think we can agree that one of them at least is not coming back next season. And I don't necessarily envy them having to hit the offseason and make that call right now, not having been able to see more of this group together. It's going to be a difficult, you know, somewhat not uneducated, because they're not uneducated, but in terms of the full roster, it is an uneducated look at it. So I think they're just wanting enough time with the three centers, and then they'll try it on the wing and get a look at that, and then they'll figure out what the heck they're best to proceed forward with. And then, of course, factoring into that is what happens at the draft lottery and where they end up picking, because very good chance they end up with a player who has potential to affect their lineup sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Ryan, let's turn to an area that's been a focus around here for a long time, maybe less so now, goal. It looks like Cam Talbot is going to be the guy. I'm wondering, with the games that remain, do you see any value in giving Laurent Brossoit the crease in maybe half those games? You want to start strong, but he's had a couple of really bumpy outings the last time out. This doesn't cement anything for next year, but do you want to give the kid a chance to get his confidence back and shine? Because it might affect what you do in the offseason as well.
Well, I mean, if there's a start to be had for him between now and the end of the season, I don't think it's a bad idea. I think they're fine to try and work him in. I'm just checking the schedule here to see if they've got any more back-to-backs coming up. But honestly, Robin, I think their mind is already made up on what they have to do next season. Maybe I'm wrong here, guys, but they have to find another goaltender and create some competition at the position. They need to do the exact same thing they did last year, which was, I mean, this year they'll have a guy, or heading into next season, they'll have a guy they know is their starter, but they can't come in with Talbot, Brossoit, and then a drop-off. Like, it's good that Brossoit played well in the minors and earned himself a one-way deal, but you can easily pay your number three goalie in the organization that much money to be a starter in the minors if he's your next up-and-coming guy. So for the deal they have Talbot on, plus Brossoit's deal, plus $985 for a veteran backup or whatever it looks like to create some competition, I think that's what they absolutely have to do at the position. I don't think they give him anything.
Oh, yeah, wholeheartedly. I would agree with that one for sure. What one last one for you. What's your thoughts on Osterley? Is this a player that you believe is somebody that could really make an impact on their team next season if they improve their decor, or is this more of a depth guy on your organization next season?
I mean, really what we're saying is, does he have the potential to be Brandon Davidson-like in terms of a depth player who all of a sudden comes out of nowhere and looks like he can fill a top, four or five spot? I like what I see from Osterley. And you guys tell me how he's been in the last few, sort of overall, but if his level has stayed similar, I've liked it. I like his feet. I like that he can skate his way out of trouble. I like that he's not overly timid out there. From what I saw, he seemed to be getting more confident as games went on. I think that they have some good potential there. I still would probably characterize him as a depth defenseman. And by that, I mean, on Peter Chiarelli's to-do list, I don't think that Jordan Osterley's play has, wiped anything off of Peter Chiarelli's to-do list. His list is still the same, whether Osterley plays this way or not. But he gives them competition at the position. He gives them a guy that can come in and potentially be a second power play unit guy in a third pairing role, or he can be a big minute guy in the American Hockey League. I still consider him a depth guy. I don't know that he's ever, that he's going to compete for a top four role necessarily, but we would have said the exact same thing about Brandon Davidson at this time last year, so who knows.
It's true. Who knows? Size might be one issue for sure. And we'll see what happens. He's definitely put himself, at least in the eyes of the conversation, as somebody who can fill in case of injury and in worst case scenario and maybe best
absolutely.
Case.
Absolutely. Like, where do you feel he is? Like, never mind draft status and what they gave up to get them and all that. Where do you put him on a simple depth chart next to Griffin Reinhart? It's important that the owners have guys that come in and Griffin needs to be pushed.
He
needs to be pushed by people. And, hey, who cares where he was drafted or where he was signed out of, or who cares about any of that? Osterley has outplayed Reinhart for a little chunk of time here, and that means something to him, to the Oilers, and to everybody, right? So
it definitely does, and I think too often people make too much of a short window, And, you know, so we'll see Reinhardt right now. You know, very different type of player. Osterley's older,
absolutely,
has more experience. And the one advantage that Reinhardt has that people all seem to be forgetting is Reinhardt gives the Oilers flexibility. He can go to the minors without waivers next season, and they can allow him to play 25 minutes down there and continue to develop his game and not feel like, oh, my God, he's rushed. Yes, some guys come in right away and succeed,
yeah,
and the list of defensemen who need a few years of seasoning in the AHL is much longer than those who don't.
Oh, for sure. And on the whole Reinhardt conversation, I mean, this idea that he's a busted pick or a busted trade or blah, blah, I mean, that's just, to me, that's just white noise and garbage to me. I'm talking about where he is in his development right this moment. Griffin Reinhardt is going to need a few years to round into an NHL defenseman. I still believe he will. I think he has the ability still. But, I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it if it takes Griffin until his, you know, another season in the American League and then a little bit more before he's one of those reliable guys that just proves he's here to stay. It just might take him that long. He's a bigger defenseman, and sometimes it takes a little bit of time, and that's okay.
Yep, nothing wrong with coming in at 23 or 24 if that's when you're ready.
Absolutely. And that's the way most other teams do it. So because it seems odd in Edmonton, that's the way a lot of other teams do it. Now, granted, where his draft position was maybe puts a little bit different layer of expectation on him. But much like I believe the world needs to do with Nail Yakupov, forget where he was drafted. That's, hey, draft is over. It does not matter. He's a player now, and what kind of player is he? You should almost do the same thing with Griffin Reinhardt. Go, hey, doesn't matter what overall he went. Throw that away. Where's he at now? He's what is he? How old is he now, guys? 21?
21. Yeah.
21-year-old developing American Hockey League defenseman with size and some ability and a little bit of experience. And hey, those are good to have in the organization. So just roll with it and let him develop.
Chager, get some rest. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, guys, take her easy.